Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Saturday, October 5th. Joining us today are Eric and Kate, two experts with differing views on our topic. Let's dive right in. Our topic today is the alarming rise in ultra-processed food consumption in America. Recent research shows that 60% of Americans' daily caloric intake comes from these foods. What are the implications of this trend?
Well, Ted, that's certainly an eye-opening statistic, but before we start panicking, let's take a step back. These ultra-processed foods have become popular for a reason. They're quick, they're easy, and they're often cheaper than fresh alternatives. For busy parents juggling work and family life, these foods can be a real lifesaver. It's not ideal, sure, but we need to consider the practical realities of modern life.
Oh, come on, Eric. That's such a cop-out. We're talking about people's health here, not just convenience. The BMJ study linked these foods to 32. That's 32. Poor health outcomes.
I understand your concern, Kate, but we can't just ignore the economic factors at play. Many families are struggling to make ends meet, and these foods provide an affordable option. It's easy to preach about health when you're not worried about putting food on the table. We need to find solutions.
But at what cost, Eric? We're literally killing ourselves with this junk. Over 70% of kids' calories come from ultra-processed foods. That's insane. We're setting up an entire generation for a lifetime of health problems. How can you justify
that? Let's take a step back for a moment. I think it would be helpful for our audience if we clarified exactly what we mean by ultra-processed foods. Can either of you provide a definition?
Sure, Ted. Ultra-processed foods are essentially industrial formulations. They're made with ingredients you wouldn't typically find in your kitchen pantry, things like high-fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated oils, and various preservatives. But it's important to note that this category also includes some fortified foods that can provide essential nutrients.
Oh, please. Let's call a spade. These are junk foods masquerading as real food. We're talking about sugary cereals that turn your milk pink, chips that come in cans, and those sad frozen dinners that taste like cardboard.
Now hold on, Kate. That's an oversimplification, and you know it. Many of these foods are fortified with vitamins and minerals. For some people, especially in food deserts, these might be their main source of certain nutrients. We can't just dismiss an entire category of food without considering the nuances.
What about the nuance of type 2 diabetes, or metabolic syndrome, or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease? These are real health crises linked directly to ultra-processed foods. A few added vitamins don't outweigh the massive amounts of sugar, unhealthy fats, and artificial additives in these
foods. You both raise interesting points. Let's look at this issue from a historical perspective. Can you think of a similar situation from the past where a change in diet had significant health implications?
Absolutely, Ted. A great example is the introduction of refined sugar and white flour during the Industrial Revolution. It led to a massive shift in dietary patterns and subsequently health outcomes. Initially, these refined products were seen as progress, a symbol of modernity and wealth. But over time, we started to see increases in obesity and dental problems. It's a fascinating parallel to our current situation.
Well, that's an interesting comparison, Eric. I'd argue that our current situation is far more severe. The scale and speed of ultra-processed food adoption is unprecedented. We're not just talking about two ingredients here. We're talking about
I understand your concern, Kate, but I think the historical example is more relevant than you're giving it credit for. It shows that dietary changes can have unforeseen consequences, yes, but it also demonstrates our ability to adapt and find balance over time. We didn't abandon refined foods entirely, but we learned to consume them in moderation.
That's exactly the problem, Eric. We can't afford that kind of slow, gradual change this time. We're looking at potentially shortening the lifespans of an entire generation. This isn't about finding balance. It's about addressing a crisis before it's too late.
Both of you raise compelling points. Looking ahead, how do you see this situation unfolding? What are some potential scenarios for the future of American diets?
I'm cautiously optimistic, Ted. I envision a future where technology and innovation lead to healthier, ultra-processed foods. We're already seeing companies respond to consumer demand for healthier options. I think we'll see a new generation of products that offer both convenience and nutrition. It won't happen overnight, but I believe we're moving in the right direction.
That's incredibly naive, Eric. We don't have time to wait for some hypothetical future products. We need action now. I foresee a public health crisis if we don't take immediate steps to drastically reduce ultra-processed food consumption. We need stricter regulations
on
food manufacturing.
You can't just dismiss the role of innovation and consumer choice. Drastic measures often lead to backlash and resistance. We need to respect individual choice and focus on providing better options. My approach would allow for a smoother transition. Families can gradually adopt healthier habits without feeling overwhelmed or deprived.
A smooth transition. Eric, we're in the middle of a health emergency. We need to prioritize children's health now. Schools should ban ultra-processed foods entirely. Parents need intensive education on proper nutrition. We can't afford to tiptoe around this issue
anymore. It's clear you both have strong feelings about this issue. As we wrap up, what role do you see for government policy in shaping future dietary trends?
I believe the government should focus on incentivizing food companies to produce healthier options. We also need better nutrition education in schools, but ultimately we need to trust people to make their own choices. Heavy-handed regulations often backfire.
That's not nearly enough, Eric. We need the government to treat this like the crisis it is. We need strict regulations on food manufacturing, heavy taxes on ultra-processed foods, and subsidies for whole, unprocessed foods. Anything less is just rearranging deck chairs.
Thank you both for this passionate and informative discussion. It's clear that the issue of ultra-processed foods in the American diet is complex and contentious. While Eric and Kate may disagree on the approach, they both highlight the importance of addressing this issue for the health of our nation. This has been TED for Listen 2, signing off.